Okay, hi, I'm Judy Nathans. I'm co-host and
Robert Winters here on Cambridge Inside Out.
Just a little bit of lag time there trying to get started, but this is our second half, and I'll just start with the score. It is the bottom of the second, two, and now you guys, maybe if you're watching, no more. It's 2-1, Boston.
There we go.
All right.
So plenty of games to go.
All right, so we kind of covered some of the big issues.
Talk a little bit about the controversy of the affordable housing overlay.
And
a little bit on Inman.
Yes. Sure. And then last week, even though there wasn't a city council meeting, there was a very important, informative zero waste committee meeting. I guess who would host that? The Health Environment Committee.
Right. So Jan Devereaux is the chair?
Yes.
Yeah.
Was she? I guess so. It seemed like, anyway. That was on Tuesday, and
so
I attended that because it was not televised. Should have been. It was an excellent presentation.
Right, but it was meant to be kind of an update on where we
from
stand
the city
on the whole zero waste
process, which includes recycling and the organics update.
Right.
So the city presented. They had a PowerPoint that was presented by John Fitzgerald, who is, I think, I forget his title, but he's
sort of head
of
sanitation. So
exactly.
And it's sort of basically, once upon a time, recycling and regular rubbish were completely separate divisions.
But now,
and now
it's
joined.
Like waste, right. So he presented, waste and then Michael Orr presented. So
he's recycling director.
Right. And you actually have their presentation is on your site.
Right.
Plus,
we have it on the one for this particular show, but the thing is that I'll also put it up on the full site shortly.
Right, so that you can find it there, and when the committee report comes out, which should be soon, there were some excellent presentations by Kirsty Petchy, who is from the Conservation Law Foundation, who was kind of, and their whole thing, zero waste, is do not landfill it, do not burn it, and basically compost/anaerobic digestion, although that sort of came up as an issue since our program is actually, our stuff is anaerobically digested, not composted per se, but that's getting technical.
Right.
So she recommended, which is, when I was on the committee, we did like trash limits are really work, like pay as you throw, whatever you want to call it. And I know that the Recycling Advisor Committee has been working on that, presented something to Owen O'Riordan, who's the commissioner head, and he and DPW is working on that, but it's going to take a while to roll it in. But that's definitely on the agenda since it's 150 pounds per household, which kind of equals about 5 32-gallon trash barrels. But you see, everyone's using these toters now. They can actually own, and then there's confusion between gallons and pounds, which I didn't like the way they use the language. But
I'm always amazed when I hear figures like 150 pounds per family per week. It just seems like such a lot.
I know, but you know, these 50-gallon toters that a lot of people use can actually hold 125 pounds. So
right, but I just don't understand how people generate that much waste.
I know, because if you're recycling and now if you're composting, diverting your food scraps, I don't know why you're putting garbage out every week.
Right.
However,
whatever happened to leftovers?
I know, you have to learn how to use everything.
Right.
Just because something looks bad.
Don't cook too much.
You know, and I'm a gleaner. I volunteer with the Boston Area Gleaners, and they take stuff from the farms that they can't get to for whatever reason, and a lot of the stuff that they won't even take because it might have we all take it, and you just cut it off, and you can make things with it.
Yeah,
but
right.
But the other part was on the recycling, and that, you know, is anyone that follows the whole recycling industry, in fact, PBS NewsHour focused on Cambridge on two sessions, October 4th and October 11th. You can also get that on their website.
Right.
On Cambridge and the whole dilemma with sending our recycling to China, which doesn't want it anymore because it's contaminated. So pay attention. You're going to be getting more reminders from DPW about what really should go in your recycling and what really can't be. And down the line, it might get stricter.
I think a few years back, especially when we went to single stream recycling.
That's when a lot of things.
The big push was toward volume.
Yeah, right.
Get the
people were throwing
up.
In hoses. They were throwing in propane tanks. They were throwing in styrofoam. They were throwing in plastic bags.
Sticks of dynamite.
Yeah.
No. It's happened, actually.
Bowling balls. I listen to a lot of these webinars.
I went to a materials recovery facility out in Springfield, Mass. One time.
Oh, did you?
And the person who was running it.
Springfield Murph, yeah.
Yeah, and the person says, "Oh yeah, we get a lot of things. We got a stick of dynamite through here once."
It's dangerous for workers. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting thing.
I know.
People should. If we do have a materials recovery facility in Charlestown.
Yeah, it's Casella. They do a very good job. There's one coming up, actually. You should go on the DPW site.
I mean, if you ever wonder why can't I put plastic bags in, if you go to the facility and see it, it'll become abundantly clear why it's a problem.
But that doesn't mean you can't recycle them.
But you just got to do it right.
Right.
Yeah.
But I do want to say the other presenters quickly were a woman, Laura Orlando, who was this expert in environmental health from BU, who actually kind of scared everybody with all about the toxic sludge that's in sewage pellets that come from anaerobic. Anyway, it's out there. And then Amy Perlmutter. Do you remember Amy?
Yeah, sure.
Amy Perlmutter lives in our town. We're very lucky. And she used to direct recycling in San Francisco years ago. Mm-hmm. But she is a consultant. She's actually the head consultant or head person for the Boston Zero Waste Initiative. And so she spoke on why we're in this dilemma with China. It was a very excellent presentation. And so I'm looking forward to these committee reports because I assume they'll have all of these talks in attachments, yes? Isn't that what committee reports
usually
do? They
should be there, yeah.
Because it was like a round table.
Yeah, it should all be
so,
there.
Because of these great reports and the public comment couldn't have that much, and that was really good, there probably will be another meeting because the councillors didn't get a chance to really have any discussion on this stuff.
Right.
So that's coming up. So
maybe I can make the next one because I couldn't make this one.
Yeah, and it's really very worthwhile. And so go to these different things I've said. Why don't we just show this because this is what's you can look at.
Ready?
Yeah.
Here we go.
This is what the presentation was. It's about 20 pages, or 29 says it right
pages,
there.
Yeah.
And it basically talks about the recycling. You can see it. It's the master plan, curbside compost, and curbside recycling. And a lot of statistics in there, and very worthwhile. And Robert has it on his site, I'm sure.
I'll make it even more available.
Great.
As well.
And also the links to the PBS NewsHour.
Yeah,
I'll put that on there too.
Load that up as well.
Yeah.
You know, it's been interesting, you know, since we've been involved in doing recycling related matters for a good long, long time.
Yes.
To sort of watch the whole thing evolve over time. You know, one of the things that we used to hear a lot, you know, from Sumner Martinson, who was with the state DEP, was one of our real
he's
major.
He's not with them anymore.
I think he's retired now.
Okay.
But Sumner used to say that that he used to make a distinction between recyclers and people who are collectors. Says if you're just putting out a blue bin and you're filling it up with stuff and you're just collecting it and shipping it somewhere, that's not recycling. That's collection.
Hmm.
And recycling is when you they always put the three arrows, right? So you can collect it, but the thing is, if you're not remanufacturing something or making some other useful product at the end, then it's not really being recycled. You got to cycle it around, right?
Well, that's what we were doing theoretically by sending it to China. They were making things out of it.
But the thing is that I remember, 20 plus years ago, the idea was about developing markets for recyclable materials.
Right.
And I know that certainly happened. There were people
getting into it. But not enough. The paper mills closed here because we were sending on paper. They wanted it in China because they were sending us all those things that you buy in boxes.
But for a while, actually, American paper mills were actually kind of getting refitted to take advantage.
Yeah, but they closed. But now they're slowly coming back. And hopefully the manufacturing industry for recycled products is coming back. But as Ben Harvey, who's a big E.L. Harvey and Sons, they're one of the big major recyclers and trash people in the state. He says in this PBS NewsHour, that's still going to take a few years to get up and running to bring it back to the United States.
I think that's the way it's always been. So you may have something which is economically advantageous, like basically putting recyclable material into empty cargo containers.
Which is why that all came about, because sending back empty.
It was very economical.
Exactly.
So the thing is, they ship Chinese goods to America.
And we were shipping them our supposedly
recycled. We are a port city,
so
that works out well, too.
Right.
So you basically have empty, rather than ship the containers back empty, you just put in your recyclable materials. But if the markets in China go away,
and then I just read India's closing it, Thailand's closing it,
right,
because their own infrastructures have changed, and they're more aware of pollution. They're more actually they do even a better job, and they're getting rid of their little mom and pop operations, which were not healthy, and they're building their own structures. So they don't want our garbage, literally.
So if you're if you're some some hotshot coming out of MIT and you want to be an entrepreneur,
make something out of that stuff.
Make video games, okay?
Right. Yeah.
Take that old brain and
Spoiler alert! Have you heard of Spoiler Alert? That came out of MIT, and they work with supermarkets and big producers of food, and they connect people right away to get.
The supermarkets
pay for it.
My students are MIT students, right?
Yeah,
it's good for them.
They've got the brains.
But the thing is that it's like telegraph, SOS, we need you, we need people, both, young recent graduates from schools, but people in the industry, basically just let's step it up and to create good, sustainable markets for recycled
materials. I mean, if we can make
materials.
Guns out of 3D printers, I think we should be able to
I think we could do this, right? We can make goods out of broken glass and steel and aluminum.
See, that's the problem. We had a glass place, and then it closed in Franklin. And I've heard of maybe something.
And, Milford,
and that's a problem, because that glass breaks down in those single streams and...
When we were first doing things, even as a volunteer program.
Oh my God! We had to separate green and brown,
I had to
take off the little metal things.
Yeah. Because it was all about reducing contamination.
That's
because
right.
Because the recyclable.
We
markets,
had the right idea.
So I think it was American Can Company or their successor was in Milford, Mass. So we'd load up a truck of glass product, and you had to break it up into
that's
amber.
That's interesting, because that's where that started.
Emerald and flint, which is in the real world is called brown, green, and clear. And the thing is, they would actually remanufacture that into new bottles. But the thing is as those plants disappeared...
Well, no, something did start in Franklin, which makes it interesting, because it's near Milford.
Right. So there were some efforts that were...
But then it was recently closed, so
But the thing is that it was unfortunately true that sometimes the best available marketplace for glass was to crush it up, use it
for
as
aggregate. Right,
so you could use it as for me. In roads, I'm pretty good with that, but if you're using it just to basically bed... drainage pipes at landfills, which is what was sometimes happening.
Yeah, and then
it might be recycling because they needed gravel anyway.
Right.
But it's not a real feel-good thing to think that you're carefully washing those bottles so they can be used basically.
I mean,
to
in Europe, they still do it. They're recycling the whole wine bottle, and I think California there might be some things about that. I don't know why we can't do that. Why are we breaking a wine bottle?
I know.
It's made to last forever.
There are better ways to do this, folks.
We do have the bottle bill for beer bottles, but now everything's coming in cans, they say. So
I think it's time for a kind of a second
revolution.
Wave of recycling revival.
And manufacturing, because the recycling does provide jobs.
Right.
So Mr. Trump.
Right.
I'm not calling him president.
I think a bit of a campaign is being initiated called Recycle It Right. Is it called Recycle It Right?
Don't
just throw it in the bin, but do it right.
Think about what you're doing.
Think about it.
No styrofoam right now, and it gets a little, I don't want to say things now that haven't been said, but
so there may be some
that
materials
that
waxy may not
things,
be,
you gotta be
so
careful
welcome
of.
In the future. Because it's important not just to say, I'm righteous, I recycle, but to say,
the proper
recycling. I'm doing it right because this stuff is of enough quality that some use can be made of
but
it.
But even more important, do you really need to buy that extra thing? That's the
bottom line. He said, if you can reduce first, then recycle.
So
later.
Buy not things in number ones and twos. That's the most desirable plastics, like your milk jugs and your detergents come in that. There's some question about the number sixes and sevens, which I don't know. I mean, at least if they're clear, it's okay. The black ones, they don't know about. But we'll keep you informed down the line. But just be careful of what you throw out. We've all got to participate in this because our costs, as they pointed out, I won't go into it right now, but we were getting paid for recycling, and then we're paying $30 a ton. We're now paying $60 a ton
to recycle,
$99 a ton to dispose of trash. It's getting too close.
So I'll just point out something that was true from the very beginning. It was never not true, which was that this is not just about being righteous from an environmental point of view.
Don't be inspirational.
It's also an economic question.
It's economic question.
Right? So the thing is you got to do things right.
Right.
So that in fact, you know, you actually
just
can.
Just be smart when you buy. Just be smart. You know? And the cardboard, that is an ultimately wonderful item to recycle. So I know you're buying a lot out there. I buy stuff. But the cardboard is desired.
Right.
Because it is used a lot and that's good.
Right. So anyway, so I'm glad they had the hearing.
Yes,
And I hope
very
that,
well
you know, we'll see.
Oh, did I tell you there were like almost 40 people there?
Which really?
Went at
That's
1 o'clock
good.
In the afternoon. Yeah.
Wow.
It was very well attended. So people are definitely paying attention.
So anyway, so that was one thing here.
Yeah.
Something, this is just sort of a minor point, but I'm going to, I think
minor.
I'd like to.
Something's minor.
Oh, I've got a list of many things
this,
here.
Is this to do with smoking?
Nah. Oh,
no,
well,
the cannabis? No.
Well, a little bit on it, but it's related to cannabis, but it's actually two different issues. Okay?
All right.
So tonight there's actually I'm on a Central Square Advisory Committee.
Oh, right.
Which, by the way, is having another meeting, I think,
that's tomorrow.
Yeah. We're talking about, again,
placemaking
in Central Square. Mm-hmm. Public health is the principal focus.
It's at the annex, right?
But we had a meeting not so long ago where the people from Revolutionary Clinics who were opening up a medical marijuana dispensary.
I know, right? By Blockbuster.
Blockbuster building.
I went by there. I said, ooh.
Right. Now, the thing is that, you know, I'd much prefer a shoe store, but, you know, the thing is it's legal, and so it's coming, right? And their ultimate intention is to build, is to, when the state law changes, to have something like a cannabis cafe there.
What?
So, yeah, so their long-term picture is not
which
just
I guess
as
they
a
do
dispensary.
Need a cafe. It's true, because with all the rules, you really can't smoke
That's
anywhere.
Right. That's
not
right.
even in your apartment, you know, if you rent, probably.
One thing that was clear to me, even when the medical marijuana dispensaries were being legalized and permitted, is that this was always sort of a stepping stone toward the future, which would be recreational marijuana and maybe even things like cannabis cafes, which they do have in
other places,
like in, I think,
well,
Denver
Europe
and Colorado.
Right. Yeah.
Right? So, you know, unless the voters rise up and change this is going to happen. So, but here's the dilemma, and this we talked about at the Central Square Advisory Committee. Current state law basically says that if you're going to run a dispensary, you have to kind of make it look almost like an old speakeasy, meaning
you can't look in.
You can't see what's going on or whatever. Now, I think that's sort of a dishonest law because if it's there, just let's be.
I mean, liquor stores, I don't make.
No, you don't have to hide the bottles in the window,
which
right?
I wish they would.
Right, but the thing is, so what's proposed here at the Blockbuster one is okay. So you open up your dispensary and eventually your cafe, but under current state law, you have to obscure things in the window. So what are you going to do? Let's see, people say, oh, let's put in art displays in the window. You know, when I think of that, I think, all right, now that's retail death. You know, to me, like there used to be in the Quest Diagnostics building before they tore it down to build Mass and Main, they had images of retail in the window.
Oh, where the old bot,
rather than retail that used to be there. So whenever you take away actual retail and you replace it with symbolism, it doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
But all right, so they will probably in front of the planning board tonight. They will show plans where they say, "Oh, we're going to allow the community to put in the kid art here and this and that." And I said, "Listen, we can do a lot better than that." And I will relate this also to something that was part of the Central Square restoration petition, where they put in some restrictions on so-called formula businesses. Now, formula businesses, like, for example, Amazon opened up a storefront in Central Square.
And they were given some grief about their
Some definitely some grief, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so the thing is, their interpretation of what regulating a formula business was like changing a logo, which I think is nonsense.
Yeah.
What I would love to see is actual retail. So my suggestion, you know, shoot me if you want here, but the thing is that you've got a whole front street frontage on Massachusetts Avenue, let's say. Why don't you simply allow what I would go to call the shallow retail frontage, almost like an arcade? So if somebody wanted to, you know, grant, so I like hot dogs, okay? Somebody wants to run a 5 foot deep hot dog stand, run out of a storefront.
Within the space of that they've been allocated though? Why would they give up that
Listen,
space?
Listen, because they've got
acres
of space to work with.
Do they?
Yes, for the particular one where Revolutionary Clinics is coming in,
yeah.
They've got incredible amounts of
but
space.
But I don't know what they need in their back rooms, though.
They don't need
they
don't
medical.
Need it all.
They probably need
they're already talking
and
about
everything.
Putting in sort of a buffer and then just sort of giving away the front space anyway.
Oh, they are talking about
that. But only
because
state law requires it.
Oh.
So I said, let's do it better.
Like little pop-ups.
So don't put...
How about a food truck? Or food... Or food, whatever,
to
not
somebody,
a truck, but a...
So you have a little
a hot dog
counter,
stand.
A hot dog stand, a newsstand.
Mm.
I suggested something simple as, like, even a place like where you can fill up your water bottle with water, right? There's lots of little things that you could do, you know. A guy...
Who would pay for that?
Well, basically, it would just be, you know, included in the... You know, you could get a little income coming in off of that, you know. Mm-hmm. But it basically just create active retail frontages. And I would hope that when planning board and other... city boards are reviewing plans for so-called formula businesses, they would consider asking somebody, say, listen, rather than just have blank plate glass windows at a bank, why don't you just sort of, you know, put some of the operations behind it and actually just have some more active frontages.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds good, but I would think maybe they then don't want that little kid going into that place to get a hot dog because it's too close.
But they're not going into the place. They're going
so
the
really
transactions
okay.
right out at the sidewalk level.
Oh.
You know, the thing is, there are people who sell, I was a woman who used to sew, you know, yarn things and would sell like hats and scarves and little trinkets and things up by the old Citizens Bank. Well, not the old Citizens Bank, the Citizens Bank.
When was that?
Actually, it's probably still there in the warm weather.
Does she have a permit? What do you mean? You mean in the bank itself?
No, just out in the sidewalk in front.
Yeah,
so
she
why not
got a permit.
No, I don't know. Maybe
to sell things, I think you need a permit.
I think, yeah, may not even be legal, but so make it legal.
Yeah.
And then basically set the window
places.
Back, like, you know, 3 feet deep, and basically say, if you want to sell scarves or hats here or eyeglasses or whatever, or sunglasses.
Okay, but I'm still confused. Are you inside or outside?
Be outside.
A hot dog stand outside in the winter?
Well, the thing is, you say you have a roll-up window.
You're basically talking about outside space.
Listen, I'm not wedded to the idea exactly this
okay.
way. I'm just trying to suggest a
all
notion
right.
here.
Okay.
This is the idea that rather than put in sort of representations of what should be happening in a square, like pictures of commerce.
Oh, right. Do
put
something
in commerce.
Real. Put in commerce.
Put in something
right?
real.
Yeah. No,
so,
I agree.
You know, sell...
Even if it isn't all the time... It couldn't
right.
be like, but you could, depending on the season, you could have.
You can close the window. Just have a window
yeah.
that opens up, and you know somebody
like that
deals
idea.
Things. You
good
know?
Luck on that.
So
I don't know.
Listen, placemaking in Central Square.
Okay.
I mean, that's what it's all
well,
about.
Well,
right?
You're going to that meeting, right?
You think I'm not going to be saying this tomorrow? Yeah, absolutely.
Is
will.
That at night? I think it's a
6 o'clock meeting tomorrow night up at City Hall Annex.
Yeah. 3:44.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, there's some creative things we can
yeah.
do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I originally came out of New York City, and I remember we'd go down to Canal Street, and you could buy blue jeans over the counter right at the sidewalk.
That's the old garment district.
Yeah, but the thing is people would put things out on the sidewalk. It was commerce, and more commerce.
Haymarket is still like that.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. So there you go. Let's do Haymarket in Central Square. Right in front of the Revolutionary Clinic, right?
I was in Harvard Square last night. I was thinking, you know, we've got juice bars and we've got, well, not there, but a lot of the stores now are very kind of more higher, upper income
well,
stuff.
You know, that's right. That's why.
I have not been to a juice bar.
So,
I won't go in one.
So let's when I say hot dog stand,
I love
I'm speaking
hot dogs.
Metaphorically,
there's no
of
good.
Course.
You know who isn't a bad hot dog is Maine Burgers. But other than that, oh wait, not
Sullivan's.
Sorry, no. Yeah, but that's not right here.
No, it's not right here.
Roxy's
right.
actually, which is down the street from here, does have a nice hot dog.
Okay, I've actually had a hot dog there.
Yeah, so I will
right.
give a shout to them.
So anyway,
and Whole Heart Provisions, which is also owned by them, is right next door, and they're opening another one. I heard, maybe in Porter. I don't know.
Yeah. Anyway, there's some good ideas that can be had here to really kind of recreate Central Square and other places too, in a way that I think is a little more in sync with what it once was.
Yeah.
You know it's.
We used to have a Corcoran's. We used to have a McCrory's or something.
I know. It's actually one of the sore spots I have whenever we have our Central Square meetings.
Yeah.
Which is that people always talk about preserving the funk, and I say, don't preserve the damn funk. bring back family centric. Yeah.
Well, Target, I guess, is an attempt. It's better than nothing. Because at least you can go in there. Yeah. You could actually get a sewing.
Well, thing, we can do so much better.
I know.
And we got our beautiful murals are starting to go up now.
Yes, I know we showed the one 2 weeks ago.
It's up on Morris Nagar's building.
Now, what's the next one going up? It's right in this Lafayette Square near
there's
here.
There's one actually on WILG, which is a Women's Independence Living Group, which is a MIT.
So maybe by next week you'll have a photo of that?
Yeah, we will, sure. I think it was union. I think it was like local, I forget which local, but it was unionized labor actually came in and did us all a tremendous service. For nothing, they came out and they prepped all the surfaces on the Green Street Garage and over on the side of where the Blockbuster building is. And they did it gratis. And they deserve a lot of credit for it because they did us. It's not a gimme. Making that surface so that it'll take a mural that's actually going to last.
Yeah, it's probably special kind of paint and everything.
Actually, the mural that was on the Pearl Street side of the Green Street Garage was peeling right from the beginning. I mean, the thing is, it was badly
applied.
So was
that because of the paint that was used, or what?
There are some issues about applying things on brick surfaces or concrete surfaces which breathe.
And maybe since then they've developed certain things for the...
Right, so I think the people who are behind this, Michael Mana's team, the Central School Business Association and others, Cambridge Arts Council, and the artists, of course, they're really trying to do this right.
And they still need some money for the, I guess if you go to the Central Square Business Association.
So if you got a few bucks, go take a look what's on Morris's building, and you might actually realize it's a worthwhile investment.
And it's local.
Yeah, it's definitely local. So the thing is, let's not worry so much about the funk. Let's bring back the charm.
Right.
Let's bring back the charm of Central Square.
Yes. So there's lots of meetings coming up and stuff, and you have it all on your website, yes?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Yeah. And there's the roundtable on Monday night, which is televised. There's no public comment.
Yeah. I forget. There's an Inman Square meeting on October 24th, and there's
that's
a city council.
That's about design,
There's one actually on the Harvard Square kiosk
With that's the neighborhood long-term
planning.
Meeting.
It's a committee meeting.
Is that this week?
Next Tuesday, October 23rd. Right. Okay. So anyway, there's plenty to do, so be a good citizen.
Yeah. And the Sox score is 2-1 right now.
There we go. See you next week.
Bye.